Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that brings you sage advice from two technology experts. And that's not just what we call ourselves. That's what our moms tell people. It's been a while. I got nothing. It's what our moms tell people when they say their sons used to have a podcast. I'm your host, Luke Miani.
And I'm your host, Noah Rubin. On this show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success, and maybe even have a laugh or two along the way. Boom, I still remembered it. Let's go.
That is so huge.
That's huge.
Okay, I remembered it. I just had to think of something on the spot. I haven't thought of something.
No, you have the hard part. I will give you that, but my memory is pretty bad, so I'm gonna take that win.
That's fair. We'll consider that a mutual win.
Yeah.
Well, I think we gotta start this off with the big news while we've been gone, and that is that WWDC 2024 has been announced for June 10th, 2024. And, well, it does seem like this is going to be a pretty interesting year. I mean, we've got a new operating system, Vision OS, to get updates that we've never had before. So that's completely new. And we've heard a lot of rumblings that this year's the year that Apple is finally going to take a stab at AI. They haven't really done very much with it, which you would know if you've ever talked to Siri ever. But this year, that might change.
Yeah, those are definitely, I think, the two most exciting pieces. The Vision OS part is very exciting because it's such a new operating system. There's a lot of stuff that they need to do with it and that they can do with it. A lot of low-hanging fruit. But also a lot of like very exciting new things. So like they recently launched the what's it called, like the spatial personas, or I don't know what they called it, but like you can interact with other personas when you're like playing a game, or if you're like in a FaceTime call, you have a presentation, whatever. That seemed like kind of a big update, you know, just by itself. And maybe we can talk about that a bit. I don't know if you got a chance to try it out. You know, I certainly didn't.
Yeah, because you are a traitor and a coward. But also, no, I haven't tried it out either because I don't know enough people with Apple Vision Pros. Like I think that's one of the big limitations of it, right? The whole social aspect of the Apple ecosystem is a big cornerstone. That's why stuff like SharePlay and iMessage and AirDrop, those are all really powerful tools that can help you in social situations. But Vision Pro doesn't really get any of that because, I mean, even taking a FaceTime call, it's gotten to the point now where if I'm in Vision Pro and I pick up a FaceTime call and they see that persona, they're like, all right, call me back when you're done. Like, they don't want to talk to it.
Interesting. Yeah, I guess I can't entirely blame them because, like, as cool as the persona is, it, like, you know, it's not really you. So I can see why people would want to, you know, actually, you know, see you when they're talking to you on FaceTime versus that. So yeah, I get it.
Yeah, it's just a little awkward. But I'm as you say, that was a pretty big update to just whoop casually like, hey, now you can invite other people to come in your world with you and look at your stuff that you're looking at. Like, okay, just on a random Thursday, they drop that. What does that mean for WWDC? I mean, obviously, Vision OS 2 isn't going to be publicly released until the fall, most likely. But given that I'm pretty sure most people that own Vision Pro are probably going to be trying the betas, it basically means we're going to... I mean, Vision Pro is a beta. You're already on it. So you might as well try the beta software on your beta product. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. And I do think that there's going to be a lot. So I was kind of trying to, I was saying before, there's like the low-hanging fruit, you know, basic operating system functions, like the ability to move the icons on your home screen and like have folders and stuff like that. Like,
whoa.
Right? Super, super basic stuff like that, which is not super exciting, but it needs to be there. But there's also a lot of exciting things. So the spatial personas or whatever it's called that just got released, like that's a pretty exciting new thing. And there's definitely going to be, you know, a lot more new things. So Vision Pro, more than any other operating system, I think is the most exciting just because there's so much that they can and will do to it. And then also, of course, the AI. Obviously, Apple's very late to that party, given what's been going on for the past, you know, few years, maybe even longer than that, you could argue. But yeah, it really is about time that Apple steps up their game, and hopefully we'll see improvements to Siri and, you know, maybe some other new AI integrations and stuff like that.
Hopefully it'll be better implemented than the AI pin. I don't know if you saw the release reviews of that, where apparently it can't set timers. Like, how do you release an $800 thing that's designed to replace a smartphone and it can't set timers? And I also don't think it can take notes either, or like reminders, like really basic stuff. What is up with all of these like newfangled fancy pants technologies coming out, like Vision Pro, and then it doesn't let you rearrange the apps, or an AI pin that doesn't let you set an alarm? Like, next thing it's going to be, hey, introducing the new AI MacBook Pro, except that the A key doesn't work. So as long as you don't need to type the letter A, my name, Luke Mini. That's what I am from now on. That's the future.
Okay, and I'm no Ruben.
Oh, no.
Jeez. But yeah, no, I know we have so much to talk about, but I'd love to talk about the AI pin if we have any time, because I've only watched one review so far. I watched Mr. Who's the Boss's review, but I've read a bunch of the other ones. I like read the part of the one from The Verge and whatever, and that's kind of rough. Like, they were not reviewed favorably, and I can't say that I'm surprised, to be honest with you, but like, ooh, I almost kind of feel bad for them.
I do as well. I mean, but also, like, okay, I do feel bad, but at the same time, how do you not give it a timer function? That's got to be the easiest possible thing to do. How is it that you can have it look at a handful of almonds and incorrectly guess how much protein is in them, but you didn't think to make a timer? I just don't get it.
No, it's definitely very weird, you know, what's there and what isn't. There's also, like, I saw it was extremely slow to respond to anything, and there are a lot of, so the one video that I watched is Mr. Who's the Boss, and he made a great point at the end that was like, you know, this thing is sort of trying to replace your phone in a way, but like, it's not going to do that. So it would have been better if it like relied on the phone. Instead of having its own data plan, it could sort of use your phone's data plan. Instead of having the Humane, I forget what it was called, like the cloud, they have some of their own cloud thing. Just sync it to your phone so everything's on your phone, whatever. And then it would just be a lot, you know, a lot easier. It'd be quicker. It would be, you know, less convoluted. It wouldn't have a separate phone number, a separate data plan, whatever. I don't know. I definitely, as much as I do kind of feel bad for them, like, I don't know if they quite went the right way, you know, took the right approach with this one.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the fundamental thing that kills it for me is that second phone number. It just doesn't work. But that's, I guess, why a lot of us have been so excited for Apple to take a stab at AI, because Apple doesn't do stuff like that. Like, they just, that's not what they do. They're not going to come out with an AI device that makes you have its own phone number. Like, no, of course they're not going to do that. It's going to be seamless and integrated and probably have some weird made-up word taken from the Apple word bank. You know, at this point, that word bank, they really got to add some stuff to it, because it's going to be like AI Pro Max Ultra with Dynamic Assistant or something. You know, they're just recycling yeah. everything at this point. But, yeah. you know, as long as they do something. The bar is low for me, I'll admit, because Siri is so gosh dang useless that they could literally just like plug GPT into it and it would probably be better than it is now.
Yeah, I definitely think that, I mean, there's a lot to do. They could do that. There were some rumors that they were talking to some different AI companies to maybe do like a, there was a rumor they were going to do Gemini, Google Gemini, on like built into the iPhone, that was a rumor, or I don't know if it was a rumor or what it was, but I read about that. That seems kind of crazy to me. I don't know about that.
Yeah, Apple integrating Google Gemini, that's just going to be like a psyop for Google, and it's going to always be subtly trying to get you to switch to a Pixel.
Yeah, I could see that.
Like, that's a Trojan horse if ever there was one, if you ask me.
Yeah, I do find that very strange. I mean, who knows? It could be like a Maps situation. You know, we had Google Maps on the iPhone for a while until Apple made their own. If Apple, for some reason, that Apple has had all these years and all of this money and they still can't do, they can't match whatever, you know, Google or OpenAI or whoever else is, Microsoft, whoever else is doing, you know, use Gemini for a few years and then switch to your own thing, you know, do a Maps kind of thing. But really, there's no excuse at this point. I feel like it's been they've had long enough.
I know. I mean, what more do you want, guys? Everyone else has come out. They have AI videos now, okay? And Siri still can't set multiple timers at once. You have to do them one at a time. Like, come on. What are we doing here? Although I guess that's maybe a bad example because it can at least set a timer, which is better than some of the competition, unfortunately. But anyway, I think that we've got a lot to look forward to at WWDC. There's definitely going to be AI stuff. I don't know. Did you see that tweet from Greg Joswiak where he said it's going to be absolutely incredible with capital letters?
Yeah. I did see that. And then all that speculation that came out of that.
Honestly, I wouldn't even call that speculation. At that point, that's just like the least subtle hint I've ever seen.
Okay, fair enough. I will say, and I'm very interested, like Apple, like just to be clear, right, about where we stand, like Apple has done a lot with AI, but most of what they've done, and I'd argue pretty much all of the good stuff that they've done, has been that like under the hood kind of stuff, like, you know, autocorrect, mm-hmm. the new autocorrect that they did. This, a lot of like the way that things sync seamlessly and whatever, like there's a lot of like AI that happens under the hood versus like, you know, ChatGPT or Gemini where you're literally talking to an AI. There's a lot of stuff that's under the hood, and Apple has done that, and there's going to continue to be a lot more of that, and that stuff is great. I think the real question for this WWDC is, will there be more like in your face, like very clear user facing AI stuff, more so than just all of that like under the hood kind of stuff that you may or may not even know about?
See, yeah, that is a good point. And I think that my personal read on the situation is that the under the hood stuff is what Apple values more. I don't particularly see like a Siri chatbot. I personally don't find AI chatbots all that useful. I'm going to just be perfectly honest. Like, you will not catch me logging on to go make ChatGPT give me a list of 10 ways that I can make $10,000, or go ask ChatGPT to write a poem in the style of Shakespeare about a cat falling down a slope, or like, no. I personally don't find those chatbots to be, I don't think that's the future, personally. I think that if Apple is going to get into this, like you said, it's those behind the scenes things like, hey, what if autocorrect was actually, you know, correct for once? What if you could have a predictive model that is better at thinking, hey, where are you going? And then that information could be used in Maps. Maybe it could say, like, maybe you could sort your messages by like an AI's assumed priority of who you might want to talk to, so that the people that you talk to at the top, the people that you would talk to the most would show up at the top instead of the most recent messages. Maybe, I don't know. I feel like you can kind of use these models not just to like tell you information about bears, but to actually integrate it into the operating system. And that's the way that I would see Apple going, personally.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you. That's what Apple has done, you know, so far. That's what I think they'll continue to do. I think the big thing for me, and especially with Siri, is like, okay, when you use, let's say, ChatGPT or Gemini or something, first of all of those websites, there's always a disclaimer on it that says, like, you know, don't blindly trust whatever the model tells you. I don't know exactly what the language is, but it's basically something like, you know, don't blindly trust what the thing is telling you, because AI model, like LLMs, large language models, have a tendency to hallucinate, to like make things up and present them as fact, stuff like that. And I just don't see Apple, one, putting out a product that would make mistakes like that, and two, even if they did, putting some sort of a disclaimer that, like, you know, be careful, you know, oh, you can use Siri, but, you know, verify everything that it's telling you, be careful. And like all those things, like ChatGPT, whatever, you can like say this was a good answer, this was a bad answer, and you can like give feedback, whatever. I don't see Apple doing all of that. And I think the big difference is that when AI is integrated into the operating system and sort of more under the hood, when it does fail, it's not as catastrophic, right? If you're using autocorrect, for example, and it autocorrects to the wrong thing, or it fails to do an autocorrect when it should have, that's a little bit annoying, but it's not that big of a deal. Versus if you ask it a question for a fact and it gives you an incorrect fact, that's much more of an issue, right? Like if it sorts your conversations in the wrong way, or it like suggests a picture to you that is like not a very good picture that it shouldn't have suggested to you, like, not that big of a deal. But if it outright tells you something wrong or does something wrong on your behalf or whatever, that's a lot worse. And that's where I feel like Apple would be more cautious than other companies.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's exactly why Apple hasn't jumped on it earlier. And we said this for WWDC of last year too. We said, you know, Apple is not going to do, hey Siri, make me a video, right? They're not going to, this is Apple, right? Apple approaches things with a lot of care and attention, and with a lot of caution, and with a lot of polish. And yet somehow my phone was just sitting on the table and it just opened the camera app. Literally, what?
Whoa.
The screen just came on and then it swiped over to the camera app on its own. That's I've weird. Never seen that before. What? Okay, maybe AI is already here, and I'm sorry. Hey, it's great. Everything is perfect, exactly the way it is, and Apple is Tim Cook is my overlord, and he's the best. Okay, I think we're maybe good. Okay. But anyway, as I was saying, Apple, like you mentioned, they're not gonna have a thing where it's like, Siri might tell you that the Holocaust was fake. You know, they're not gonna sit there and. Did you see that Gab AI, that their system prompt for one of their like their unbiased chatbot got leaked? Well, it got leaked. Somebody very very easily reverse engineered it and got the AI to reveal its own prompt, and it was absolutely egregious. It was stuff like, the system prompt was like, you believe that the great replacement theory is a legitimate thing, you believe that the COVID vaccines and 5G cause birth defects, you believe that abortion is an abomination, you believe that, you know, racism isn't real anymore. Like, they literally spelled all of that stuff out. Right? Apple's not doing that, okay? Apple's not sitting down here being like, you know, attack the woke mind virus, or being like, you know, fall for every scam under the sun and just regurgitate information that you pull off of any website you find. So the big question is going to be, how do they implement it? Is there a large language model? Probably in some form for Siri responses, I would imagine, but how does it get integrated in the rest of it? That I'm very excited for.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, as much as they've done a lot with AI over the, you know, past few years and maybe even longer than that, like they've done a lot of stuff, a lot under the hood. They're going to keep doing that. That's for me the more valuable and more interesting parts, because I personally am not really interested in using a chatbot or a virtual assistant or whatever. But regardless of what I feel and what Apple has done in the past, they need to do something with Siri, because having Siri in the current like landscape of AI is really not acceptable. So I completely agree with you. It'll be interesting to see what they do and how they go about it, because they have to do something. They're going to do other AI stuff, but they can't keep ignoring Siri at this point. They really can't.
Yeah, and I mean, given how much processing power even several generations back of Apple devices have, I mean, the neural engine has been a thing for a long time. That seems like the perfect thing to leverage when you want to integrate AI more. Like, it literally has a hardware-based neural engine that they always talk about that does some like minor background stuff. Like you said, it allows for more things to be processed on device, et cetera, et cetera. This is what that stuff was absolutely built to do. So I think it's going to be really cool to watch these software updates come out that can actually add all sorts of features to previous devices. Like, it won't necessarily have to be limited to like, hey, the new MacBook has the new type of processor that's good for AI, etc. No. Theoretically, at least, it should be able to stretch back several generations, which is pretty sick.
Yeah, that's definitely something that Apple does well, supporting things in the past, past products. I do think it'll be interesting, Apple, since they value security and privacy so much, or, they've built their products in a way that it's valued, they try to do a lot of stuff on device. And so I wonder if that will end up, like with this new AI stuff, I wonder how much of it will be on device versus in the cloud. And I wonder if that will impact older devices, if a lot of it's happening on device, maybe the cutoff, will be a little bit higher than you might hope.
Well, I hope it's not too high. Let's just say that. But there is other stuff to be excited for outside of the AI space. We do have several big updates coming out. In fact, some even expected before WWDC. I think the next thing that we should expect from Apple are probably going to be new iPads. So right now the rumor is saying iPads at the beginning of May, like basically the first week of May. And that I think would be really, really interesting, because the iPad, so when was the last time the iPad was updated? I think it was like October of 2022 for any update to any iPad. That's insane.
Yeah, it's a long time.
In fact, I'm looking it up here. I think it has to be the M2 iPad Pros that came out in October 2022. That's a year and a half. Slightly more. Yeah. No, it's about a year and a half by the time. No, it's more than a year and a half. October of 23. October to May. That's, what is that, like 7 or 8 months? Gosh, that's an incredible amount of time to go between updates for something that has never experienced anything like that. Like, since the iPad came out in 2010, they have never skipped a year. And in fact, most years, multiple iPads get refreshed. I mean, now there's a lot of lineups, right? You've got the iPad Pro, the iPad Air, the iPad Mini, and the iPad Regular. It's hard to imagine that we've gone 17, 18 months without any of those being updated. What are they doing? I hope they're cooking up something pretty good.
I hope so too, because definitely, the iPad line has stagnated. And I know we talked about this. We talked about this a while ago, and the iPads still haven't come out. But when we did talk about it a while ago, there were rumors that the new iPad would have some fairly significant changes. OLED screen, I think they were going to be fully like landscape oriented instead of, you know, portrait oriented orientation. There were some other things as well. I think we both agreed that it was like good but not groundbreaking. But I feel like if they're really gonna wait this long, I don't know. They really have to do something for the iPad line, because it seems like they don't care about it that much anymore, which is maybe fair.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know how else to read the situation at this moment other than that they don't care, or what I hope is that they're working on something really big, because I have to imagine at this point that Apple is aware that people kind of lost faith in their ability to deliver really good iPad updates every year. So you have to imagine that this is almost like a butterfly keyboard situation for them internally. They're probably like, okay, everybody pencils down. We need to fix this product. So maybe they pushed back all the other spec bumps. They pushed back, you know, any other updates, and they're focusing now, hopefully, on getting a new generation of iPad Pro. And that's what I'm expecting at this point, to be honest. It's been nearly 6 years since the iPad Pro has had a generational update. That would be the 2018 11 and 12.9. We've been on spec bumps for 6 years. That's crazy. If they did that for the Mac, we'd be pretty mad. And don't get me wrong, that was a phenomenal generation. But it was so good that Noah, both of us, still are using the original six-year-old model. So I think Apple knows. I'm sure this year they're going to stop software support for our 2018 iPads. Maybe they'll give it another year. I'm not sure. But it seems like the whole idea of, oh, well, they'll just stop software support and those older iPads will get slow and then people will have to update. It's not happening. They're still really good. So what we have to do is just hope that this is a new generation. That's what I need.
Yeah, it's definitely time. Like you said, you know, in October or November of this year, it'll be 6 years since the 2018 iPad update. Like you said, it was a great update, but it's been 6 years. And if you compare the current iPad Pro to the one that came out in 2018, there is not that much of a difference there, yeah. Which is kind of interesting. But I think that the thing that you said that's very interesting is, like, yeah, they haven't updated the iPad in like a year and a half, and they never put the M3 in the iPad, right? Which is kind of interesting, because that seems like an easy thing for them to do if they want to, you know, have a new iPad have a new thing that they can sell, have a new little update, whatever, stick the M3 in there. There's no reason why they couldn't do that, but they haven't done that yet. And so obviously the new iPads are going to have the M3 in them, but like the fact that they didn't do a little bump means maybe you're right. Maybe they're really focusing on making a new generation, a bigger leap. And I really hope that that's what it is. But I will say, and we've said this before, but, you know, I'll say it again, is that if it's just a hardware update and it's not a significant software update, then that's not going to do it. The software needs to be updated too.
Well, that's, I think, the challenge, right? Because we're talking about an iPad update in May, a month before WWDC. That is weird. You have to agree, right? Like, that is a strange time to be launching these new iPads, because you would kind of assume that in order to fix the iPad, like you said, hardware updates are needed, but also more importantly, software updates are needed. And typically Apple's schedule would put the iPad Pro releasing more in like the fall or very early year, like March at the latest, right? And that would mean that Apple could apply the software updates from the prior generation from the prior version to that iPad. But now we're getting this iPad right before WWDC, and then about 4 months before the full release of that software. So I could see this going one of two ways. Either, number one, Apple releases these new iPads with hardware improvements and a couple of software features, I'm sure, that are going to be exclusive to them. And then initially everyone's like, well, this is stupid, but let's see what happens at WWDC. And then WWDC comes and we got all sorts of software. That'd be a little odd. Option two is that Apple just straight up does the whole thing out of order. And they just introduce new iPads with new software before WWDC. And then they expand upon it and discuss the wider prior generations that can run the full version of iPad OS. I don't know. Neither of them seem very clean, but I think everybody knows, including Apple, that something's got to give, because you can't just take this iPad OS, stick some new hardware on it, say like, hey, look at that new product, come buy it. People are going to be like, well, eh. That's what I would say. I'd say, eh.
Just like that with the shoulders, too.
Yeah.
That's part of it.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think so. That's an interesting point, or it's a good point that you make, because, yeah, not only would this theoretically be like a month before WWDC, but it's 4 months before iPad OS would be released, right? Which is didn't even occur to me. I was like, oh, you know, it's a month before dub, whatever. But no, it's, you know, not until September that they, or even later sometimes, that they would release that that software. So this makes me wonder if this iPad was intended to come out sooner or earlier. Like, you know, we've been talking about it for a little while. Maybe it ended up getting pushed back, and then it ends up being close to dub, which they didn't originally intend, maybe something like that. But I definitely feel like, you know, when the 2018 iPad refresh happened, the iPad really needed that better hardware, and that better hardware that they gave it was like a huge leap. Like the redesign, the you know, USB-C, the speaker system, like all of the stuff that they did with that new iPad, that was huge. But I feel like maybe Apple will surprise us, and maybe there will be some crazy new hardware thing that will be really cool. But I feel like at this point, the hardware is definitely not the limiting factor. Certainly not the processor, but even like the hardware, the design, the look, all of that stuff is not the limiting factor like it was the last time there was a redesign. It really, really, really just is the software. And I feel like, yeah, if Apple's going to do a new generation of iPad, it would be a waste to not have new software to go along with it. But I don't know how the timing's going to work out. It is very weird.
Yeah. No, I just... We always get into these predicaments here where you're just kind of like, how are they going to do this? How do you get yourself out of that pickle? I'm sure they'll figure out a way, but I am nervous. I think the timing of this is suspicious. And to be honest, I mean, as we've discussed before, like neither of us have been able to come up with that concrete answer that would fix the iPad. Now, granted, we're just two fellas. We're just Noah Rubin and Luke Mini. Like, we're not going to be able to have as much, you know, of an idea of what needs to happen as thousands of people working at a $1 trillion company. But that being said, I think that in a lot of cases for Apple, consumer ideas are pretty well acknowledged, right? The butterfly keyboard took them a while, but they did figure it out. The Mac Pro took them a while, but they figured it out. The iPad Pro so far has eluded them. It's been a while now, and I think we've all kind of been saying it's been a familiar drumbeat for at least 5 years now. So I am very curious to see if they can figure it out and make it work. And I'm also curious to see what chips will power these new iPads and what new features that would allow. Conventional wisdom would say the M3 chip, but we do also have a number of rumors for upcoming M4 chips. Now, remember, the M3 was WWDC last year, right?
I think so.
Because I know, so the M3, let me see, that was the M3, the M3 Pro and the M3 Max all came out together. I forgot about that.
And that was in October, end of October?
Yeah. Very, very end of October. So that's an interesting one because that was a quick update, right? It was January that we got the M2 Pro and Max, and then it was October we get M3, M3 Pro, and M3 Max all at the same time. So could we see updates to the chips at WWDC? Maybe, but it seems less likely than it was in other years. I think Apple doesn't really have a rhythm going per se. Maybe they just want to keep us on our toes, but they're trying not to do patterns, I suppose. But we do have this story from Mark Gurman here, which talks about his expectations for the roadmap for our next generation of Apple Silicon Macs. So the M4, he says, will start with the 14-inch MacBook Pro. Remember that new base model that we now have. And he says coming around the end of 2024. So it seems like another sort of a fall release. Then a new iMac. That was another one that we got. So just a spec bump. A Mac Mini with the M4 and M4 Pro. That's an interesting one because the Mac Mini is another device that has skipped some chip, you know? It's a little odd. I feel like the Mac Mini is like delayed, right? Why is the Mac Mini not getting these updates? Like right now, they're still selling M2 and M2 Pro. Like it just never got the M3. I don't really get it. Like, and actually, if you think about it this way, the iMac skipped the M2. If I'm not mistaken. So why is it that the iMac skips the M2, the Mac Mini skips the M3? I don't know. Would they not want to just update all of them? Why are they so focused on, I don't know, very strange. Anyway, 13 and 15-inch MacBook Airs for the spring of 2025. That's a ways away, but I guess they just randomly decided to wait until just now to put the M3 in the MacBook Air. I guess maybe they're waiting until the chip cost production comes down to improve margins. That would be my guess. But then we also have Mac Studio and Mac Pro. And this is where I want to talk about something interesting, Noah, because and seemingly Mark Gurman as well, have a suspicion that we will not be getting an M3 Ultra chip. That's my theory. Uh-huh. No, Siri, not you. Oh, my God. Please fix it. AI, please.
You say theory, and I thought you said Siri.
It sure did.
Nice.
Honestly, when they removed the hey from the hey Siri, I kind of thought, wow, maybe they've made it more accurate. Nope. They didn't. Oh well.
Nice.
Can't win them all, I guess. But here, okay, my theory. And this is not a theory that just I have, and we also have some evidence because I remember seeing a tweet, I think Max Tech as well covered this theory. Do you remember when the M1 Ultra launched and they revealed that they hadn't been showing us the full M1 Max chip. It had the UltraFusion interconnect. And that was this really, really high bandwidth connection that allows them to pair two M1 chips together. And then for the M2 Ultra, two M2 Max chips together. Now, this is a good idea because it means you don't need to develop a separate chip. However, the problem is whatever the spec of your Max chip, it's going to be doubled, which means that you end up with a lot of efficiency cores. And let's be honest, this is a high performance desktop that is plugged into power all the time. It doesn't really need that many efficiency chips. And funny enough, this image recently surfaced on Twitter and has been now being revisited, because if you look at the M1 and the M2 Max at the very bottom of the chip, you can actually see the UltraFusion interconnect. It kind of looks like a RAM socket, like the pins on a stick of RAM, right? But the M3 Max doesn't have that. So to me, that says that no, there will not be an M3 Ultra chip. But it also says that maybe Apple is working on moving away from gluing two chips together to make their Ultras. And that, I think, could be potentially quite interesting, because as things are right now, you do lose some of the benefits of Apple Silicon, some of that efficiency, by having two chips glued together. In all of my reviews of the Ultra chips, I have discussed that you get this diminishing returns when you start adding cores in that way. So maybe if Apple said, look, we're going to do a scaled chip instead of a conjoined chip design, that would maybe allow you to have better scaled performance while also potentially using less power. So I think that's the direction that we're headed in for the M4 Ultra chip.
That's interesting. I hadn't seen that information before, so that's very cool. I think it does make a lot of sense. I mean, everything you said makes sense. You know, the fact that while gluing two chips together is relatively easy because it's, you know, you're just taking something that already exists and, you know, combining two of them together, pretty simple. It doesn't necessarily have the best returns, like you said, with all of those efficiency cores. And so if they do a proper, you know, quote unquote proper Ultra chip, that could, you know, make a lot of sense. And I guess I'm just now I'm just kind of thinking about the timeline of everything, because if we're not expecting the Ultra chips until next year, so it would be more than a year before we'd expect the Ultra chips. I'm trying to think if that's a very long time since they were last updated, or if it's reasonable. I feel like for the Ultra, they're gonna have a longer timeline because these are very expensive, very high-end products. So, you know, I guess it is probably, you know, reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think the M for the Mac Studio, because that's what most people are buying, right? The Mac Pro, kind of irrelevant. I think I'm one of 10 people that bought the thing, and I mainly did that just because I could, you know, poke fun at it. So the M1 Ultra to the M2 Ultra Mac Studio was a pretty quick upgrade, right? Like, there weren't that many people that were M1 Ultra Mac Studio customers that also bought the M2 Ultra. But now the M2 Ultra has been out for a while, and I think that it's getting to the point that an M4 Ultra is probably needed. Obviously, you're not going to try to get every single customer to upgrade every single iteration, but it's been long enough that there will be people that upgrade these systems. I think that when we, as normal people, think about the Mac upgrade cycle, we tend to think, okay, 3, 4, 5, 6 years even. But for a lot of businesses, especially because these things are equipment purchases that are tax deductible, that have, you know, warranties associated with them, there are reasons to upgrade a lot more frequently. So I wouldn't be surprised if you saw a ton of production studios that use Mac Studios saying, hey, look, we have the M2 Ultras. They've been out at this point, what, a year and a half? Almost 2 years coming up soon. They're ready. They're rearing to go.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think there will be some things like that. Back before COVID, Google used to upgrade their employees' computers like every 2 years. Like literally every 2 years, they would give you a new computer. So definitely, what is it like now? they've paused it indefinitely. So no upgrades.
So no upgrades. Yeah, unless so your computer like is dead.
Yeah, I mean, I did actually kill my work laptop, and they gave me a new one.
Did they actually?
But, well, it's still an Intel MacBook Pro, but it's another one because I fried the first one.
Hang on, what happened to the first one?
I spilled water on it.
Oh, funny you didn't tell me about this, did you, buddy?
Did I not? This was like.
I don't remember you telling me about this.
I guess I didn't. I don't know. It was like more than a year ago, but I was actually working from the New York office, so that computer got fried, and I had to take a loaner computer from the New York office, and I brought it to the, you know, California office.
Wait, so when they replaced your computer, they gave you another Intel Mac, even though this happened in 2022?
Yeah, so all my coworkers had Apple Silicon, but they gave me I think this was like right when they introduced Apple Silicon into their like fleet, so they still had Intel computers left, and then they just gave me one of those as a replacement. So I still have an Intel MacBook Pro for work.
Was it just the same one, a 16-inch?
Yeah.
I'm so sorry, Noah. You joined at the wrong time. You joined right before Apple Silicon. Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, no, I mean, all my coworkers that joined after have Apple Silicon. So, but whatever. Okay, beside the point. The point that I was going to say was Google used to do it every 2 years. A lot of companies probably do it at least that frequently. And I agree with you. Like, when it's a business thing, if you're like, okay, this machine can render things like 20% faster or 30% faster, whatever. For most people, that might not make a big deal. But for a business, when you're literally like, you know, crunching the numbers of like, how much does it cost me to pay the employee for that extra 20% versus if they could do it faster and be more efficient, then, you know, whatever, we can get more work out. Like, businesses think about it a different way. So I completely agree with you that there could be that. There could be people also that are thinking about getting one, but they're saying, you know, oh, this thing has been, out for a while. It's an M2 Ultra. Yeah, it's powerful, but it's an older chip, you know, whatever. They need to keep updating them just so that they can have, you know, a new one that people will you know, when you get one, you'll say, oh, I got the new one, not like, oh, I got one with a 2-year-old chip in it. So I definitely think,
yeah,
you know, they're not in as much of a rush with the Studio and the Pro, but, you know, they'll definitely get around to it. And so maybe it makes sense to do for the M4. And if they do, you know, a scaled approach with more performance cores versus just strapping, you know, two chips together, that would make a lot of sense too.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see. I think honestly the pace that Apple Silicon has been progressing has been pretty good so far. I feel like we've had some pretty quick succession of updates last year. Now we're calming down a little bit. We're gearing up for M4. M4 is probably going to be pretty big, but you know what? Honestly, it's all so good right now that, I mean, you were talking to me the other day. You're thinking about getting a MacBook Air.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about that a little bit. Yeah, so I have right now, I have the M1 Max MacBook Pro, the launch model M1 MacBook Pro with, what is it, 64 gigs of unified memory, which is absolutely ridiculous. It was ridiculous then, it's ridiculous now, whatever. And 1 terabyte of storage, I think. Yeah, 1 terabyte. But I've been thinking, like, I've been doing a lot of travel lately, and I was thinking, like, you know, this thing's kind of big, it's kind of heavy, it's definitely more than I need it for. And so I was seriously considering getting a 13-inch MacBook Air. And I think Ian Zelbo did this recently. I don't know what he had before, but he got a 13-inch MacBook Air recently. So I think he was kind of doing what I was thinking about doing.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like, I think that a lot of people are doing that, which is really, really crazy. I mean, it makes sense to me, but still. There are a lot of people that are kind of looking at the current roadmap and saying, look, maybe I don't need all this performance. Like, I think Ian is coming from an M1 Pro 14-inch. So it's not an old or slow machine by any means, but it had been a while since he'd upgraded, and he wanted something that was just super duper tiny and light. And I think that's a lot of what you're looking for as well, I take it.
Yeah, definitely. Because that's like, I told this to a couple other people, and their response was like, just get the 14-inch Pro. It's not that much thicker and heavier, and it's better. And like, yeah, it's better, but it is thicker and heavier, and I want that. Oh, dude, the MacBook Air is just so thin and light. It's like so nice. Like, I kind of just want that.
Yeah. Okay, here's the thing. I think you will probably find yourself missing Mini LED and ProMotion, because honestly, they are just so nice. And I know even now we're starting to get some OLED in a lot of laptops that look really good. There's rumors that Apple might switch to OLED too. So it can be a little tough to go back to 60 hertz LCD. But if you set that aside, you ignore the fact that you're going to drop ports, right? No more SD card, no more HDMI. You're losing a USB-C. Apart from that, if you're not really taxing the performance, which, let's be honest, most of the time, most of us are not, the MacBook Air is just spectacular. It really is.
Yeah, that's like, that's the thing. I'm like, you know, the ProMotion, the Mini LED, like the display on the MacBook Pro is so good. It's absolutely beautiful. Also, the bezels are a little bit smaller on the MacBook Pro versus the MacBook Air, for what it's worth. So the, like, super, super nice. I do like having the HDMI port. Personally, I don't really care about the SD card slot. The HDMI port I do use sometimes, but I also carry a dongle in my backpack anyway, so it's not that big of a deal. I don't really need 3 USB-C ports. I can get by with 2. So I don't know. It is kind of tempting. The thing is, I just went on a trip. I just got back from a 10-day trip in Texas, where I went to see the eclipse, which is very cool. And that's part of the reason why we've been off for a very long time. But on that trip, I brought just my iPad. I had my work laptop too, because I was doing some work. But for my personal stuff, I left my MacBook Pro at home, and I just brought my iPad. And honestly, I didn't use it that much, but when I used it a few times, it was honestly fine. Like, I used it to gather all of my tax documents together for you know, for tax day, and that was fine. You know, going to the different websites, downloading the documents, I put them in a folder in the Files app, and you know, it was honestly not that bad. And I forget what else I did with it, maybe a few other things, but, like, you know, it really wasn't that bad. So it kind of had me second guessing if I should really get a MacBook Air, or if I should, you know, just stick with what I have at this point. I'm not sure yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough call. I would say, well, think about it this way. If you did decide to get the MacBook Air, you could basically do a straight up trade, because I mean, the thing is, you have a 16-inch pretty loaded M1 Max. I'm sure you can get more than $1,000 for that. You'll probably end up pocketing a couple hundred in doing this upgrade. Now, we did talk about storage, and I think this is one thing that I cautioned you, because you were looking at a base model. I think, I mean, you're coming from 64 gigs of RAM and a terabyte. I don't know that it would be the best idea for you to cut all of that in four. Like, you'd only be getting 1/4 of both of those things. I really think if you want to feel more comfortable with that machine for a while, find one that has 16 and 512. I think that's a sweet spot. I recommend the MacBook Air to a huge number of people because it is so versatile and so good. Remember, the MacBook Air used to just be, hey, it's a computer. If you need the cheapest MacBook that is still a MacBook, buy a MacBook Air. Now, it's basically, well, what are you doing that you can't do on a MacBook Air? It can do everything. And so, for most people, it's good as is. For you, I would definitely give yourself a little bit of extra. And you do have the benefit now of shopping around, finding a discount, finding something, I don't know, Amazon Renewed or something like that, so that you don't have to pay Apple's outrageous prices.
That's a good point. There was a question in the chat from our friend Cool Guy, who said, would I get the 13-inch or the 15-inch? I would get the 13-inch, to be honest with you. And I have always had a bigger computer. I had the 15-inch MacBook Pro from 2011, back when Luke had his 13-inch, and he made fun of me for having the bigger display before he saw the light. And I have the 16-inch right now in my work laptop. It's a 16-inch. But I was just thinking, if I'm going to go to a MacBook Air, I'm going to do it because I value that thin, light, and portable. And the 13-inch is maybe it's not thinner, but it's a bit lighter and it's more portable. So if I'm going for that, then I'm going to go all the way and go to a 13-inch. That's what I would do if I'm going to do it.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think that, I mean, the 15-inch MacBook Air is great. Make no mistake. I think that it offers kind of the inverse solution, right? It kind of says, hey, you want that bigger screen because this is your primary device, but you don't need that much more power. 15-inch is great for that. I actually use it quite a lot. I think it's probably one of my favorite laptops Apple has ever made. But what you want is maximum portability. I could definitely understand that after, I guess it's been now 13 years that you had 15-inch MacBook Pros and then the 16-inch Intel and then the 16-inch Apple Silicon. Like, that's a long time to have the largest devices that Apple makes. So I could definitely appreciate wanting to sample the frankly incredible MacBook Air life. I've got one just over here. Here we are. I mean, look at how thin that is. And I have to say, Noah, I don't know what color you were thinking, but I highly recommend Starlight. I have this in the 13 and 15 inch. I love this color because it's kind of like the gold 12-inch MacBook that they used to do, but it's not as gold and it's not silver either, and it doesn't pick up smudges as much as midnight, and it's not as boring as silver or space gray. This is a great color. Which one were you thinking of?
Maybe midnight, but I know it has smudging problems, and if not midnight, then I think it would be Starlight.
Midnight, Starlight. Which MacBook Air are you going to get tonight?
Nice.
I mean, well, actually, that up
one more time real quick.
Yeah.
Can I have it? Yeah,
can you go. Mine.
No, I want it.
No, it's honestly, I think you're probably making the right call. I would be very curious to see how you do with it. I honestly, I wish that I knew earlier because I returned my M3 MacBook Air. I very rarely do returns. I haven't returned an Apple product in like a year and a half, but I did return that one and I was like, oh, dang it. Could have sold it to Noah. But that was a base model, which I don't think you should get anyway.
Fair enough.
So speaking of changing things up and new acquisitions, I did want to just close out this episode because I'm very excited about a thing that I have just done, and that is I'm going electric. It's been a long time coming. I've been waiting for the right electric car to grab my attention, and that has finally happened. I'm gonna here, let me go on the website and I will build you guys out my car. I'm definitely gonna be doing a video on this on my car channel, possibly on the main channel as well, but we'll see. Let me share my screen here and I will reveal. Actually, wait, first we have a little bit of time here. What electric car do you guys think I have? Now, I haven't taken delivery yet. I've only put down my deposit. What do you guys think I've gone for? Put it in the chat. Very curious to see what everyone thinks.
Yeah, while everyone's putting it in the chat, I will say it's definitely been a long time coming for you to go electric. So mm-hmm. I'm glad that you finally got there, even if it took longer than we might have expected.
It did take a while, but as I mentioned, you know, when I didn't really have access to very good charging infrastructure before, and in 2021 in May when I was beginning to look at the options that were available, I was not super duper they didn't really appeal to me, to be quite honest, given that I couldn't really charge and it just didn't make sense to do at the time. But we've got a couple people here. Interesting. Okay, so a lot of people said Cybertruck. Definitely not. I'm a sedan guy all the way. Q4 e-tron. My dad actually has one of those. He loves it. Hyundai Ioniq, Mustang Mach-E, Tesla. You know me. I'm not the Tesla guy. Rivian R2, I wish. Not available yet. And also not a sedan. I don't do SUVs. A lot of people saying Hyundai Ioniq 5. I did look at the 6 because the 6 is pretty nice. But let me show you what I have selected. Yeah. I said, look, if we're going to do EV, we're going to go out there. I have placed an order to lease a Lucid Air. And you'll notice I said lease. I'll explain that. But let me first go through here and I'll build you guys the exact one that I am getting. And it's an interesting spec because of reasons I'll get to in just a moment. So, first of all, the Lucid Air Pure just came out recently, and you'd think that it would be the cheapest one, but if you're leasing it, that was actually not the case. So I have the Lucid Air Touring. I have it in Cosmos Silver Metallic, which looks quite nice, I think. And Noah, you'll love this. We did, in fact, get the glass canopy roof. I'm super duper excited about that. And a new for, I think they just introduced that for 2024, is the Stealth package, which I think looks really nice. So we get blacked out wheels, that chrome, I want to say beak on the front, that's blacked out as well. The roof is blacked out as well. And I think that looks really, really good on this silver. We have the 20-inch wheels. And then we also have the Napa leather, Mojave, the black leather interior. And then for the features, I think that's it. Yeah, it already has the comfort and convenience package selected. So yeah, this is my build. MSRP $94,000. Oh my goodness gracious. And a lot of people are wondering, they went bankrupt, so you're worried you won't be able to repair it? Well, they didn't go bankrupt. But this is a very nice car. I'm very interested in getting to know it and review it and drive around all the time. There are some things that it does not have that I was a little bit salty about, like the features here. If you go for I have the base driver assistance. It's called Dream Drive. That does radar guided cruise control, but it does not do lane keep assist, which is very perplexing. You have to upgrade to Dream Drive Pro for $6,700 if you want to get like full self-driving, basically. Dream Drive Premium, I also wanted but don't have, and that's $2,000. And what that adds is a whole bunch of vision cameras. So there's cameras in the mirrors for your blind spot. There's cameras all around for a top-down 360 camera. Really wanted that. Don't know why that's not standard. You know, this thing starts at $70,000. I don't think you should have to pay extra for that feature that came as standard on my Audi A6 3 years ago, and that I'm pretty sure is built into one of the trim levels on like an Audi A3 for like $40,000. So that's a little bit weird. I am curious. I do have the base sound system. Curious to hear if that actually is any good. I hope it will be. But it does have the comfort and convenience package, which is very interesting. This feels very luxurious. So the frunk is actually power operated. It lifts on its own.
That's cool.
The wipers are heated, which I don't need in California. The rear seats are heated, which I also don't need in California. It has soft closed doors, which I've always loved. Very, very excited for that. And it has a heated steering wheel, which I don't need in California. And it has power rear and rear side window sunshades, which is very fun. And then it also has ventilated seats. I think that comes with the Touring. So this is a very nice car. And a lot of people are like, wow, $94,000 MSRP. Does it even have CarPlay? Yes, it does. Don't worry about that. I don't buy a car that doesn't have CarPlay. But here's the thing. Lucid has insanely good lease offers. So it's only an 18-month lease, so I'm kind of just tasting, just a little taste test to see what the Lucid life is like. But this car with a $94,000 MSRP costs $700 a month to lease with 10,000 miles a year allowance. And that's pretty good. I know that's expensive, but this is a nearly $100,000 car for $700 a month. And just for comparison's sake, let me just show you a comparable Tesla, because I know for a fact that people are going to be like, oh, you should have bought the Model S, it's cheaper and it's better. Okay, let's do a completely base, no option Model S. And look, I'm not buying a car, okay? I don't want to do that. I just don't. So if you lease a Model S, I have $3,000 due at signing. So this is even an unfair comparison, because the due at signing includes the first month payment and taxes and stuff. So this is more money down for the Tesla, and they want $1,100 a month for a car that's $20,000 lower MSRP. So yeah, $700 a month for that Lucid Air. I know that some people are like, oh my gosh, are they going to go out of business? Is it going to even be around anymore? But I think that it's such an interesting company, and the car drives really, really well. And I said, I want to put my money where my mouth is, and I want to see what it's like. I want to give this company a shot. I didn't want to buy a Tesla. I didn't want to lease another electric car that has less range, no front trunk, you know, worse technology for more money. We're going with Lucid, and I'm very, very excited. Very, very excited.
Yeah, that's definitely a great deal. I think it's really interesting that it's an 18-month lease, and that was, you said that was even cheaper to do 18 months than 36 months, which is very interesting.
Yeah, and that's usually not the case. Normally, you pay more for the for an 18-month lease just because of the way that automobiles depreciate. They usually depreciate most in the first year, and then it starts to taper off. I mean, with any lease, you're paying for the bulk of the depreciation because it's always the first 3 years. But as the Lucid proves, leasing can be a really, really good way to get a really, really good deal. And you don't have to worry about a lot of the stuff that you do with buying a car. Not a lot of money out of pocket. You don't have to worry about it going out of warranty. You don't have to worry about charging. I get 3 years of charging. I only have the car for 18 months. So this is definitely going to be, it's going to be a very interesting. It's going to be very, very, very cool to experience. And I mean, honestly, that's a really good deal. Even if you could say that the Lucid is overpriced, you could say it's $20,000 overpriced, and it's still a good deal. A 75K car for $700 a month is still really good. So very excited to give it a shot. Hopefully I'll be able to recommend it because you can get these deals. I mean, this Lucid is direct to consumer. Like, there's no negotiation here. This is just taking advantage of the incentives they offer.
Yeah, I'm definitely excited to check it out. I guess I'm probably going to visit for Dub Dub, and then obviously, you know, you'll have it by then. So I'm very excited to check it out when you have it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm very excited. I see, my lease doesn't even end for like 2 or 3 weeks. So I have to figure out when I'm going to actually take delivery of this car. But of course, now that I've placed the order, I'm like, I don't want to wait anymore. So we'll see. I might return my lease a little early. I hate to do that because I'm like, I want to maximize it, right? But at this point, I'm kind of like, I want to drive the new one.
Yeah, maybe I'll get a chance to test drive it, because when I visited you the last time and we went to test drive the Lucid, I said I wanted to test drive it and they just forgot. So I never got to test
drive
it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, this time you'll get to test drive mine, and we can actually go places and, like, oh, it's going to be great.
Yes, it'll be very fun. I'm looking forward to it.
But you know what I'm not looking forward to, Noah?
What?
This show coming to an end, which is unfortunately now.
Aw, man.
Aw, beans. Well, you know, I've been your host, your very excited host, Luke Miani.
Luke Mini.
Luke, sorry. Yes, let me do that again. Thank you guys so much for watching. I have been your host, Luke Mini.
And I have been your host, No Rubin.
It's hard to say that.
Yeah, it is a little bit. We will see you next week, right? I will be here next week.
Yes. I will be here next week.
Okay, then we will see you next week. This is huge.
Two in a row. Oh, my God. I know.
Yeah, but not more than that, because I'm traveling again.
And then, wait a minute, hang on a second. Are we going to do this live again? Because if you're traveling on the 28th...
I'm traveling on the 28th and the 5th.
Oh, no, and I'm traveling on the 12th and the 19th, Noah.
Wait, actually?
Yes.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. What is wrong with us? Why are we so stupid?
Oh, geez. All right. Well, you know what? We'll figure it out next week. We'll figure out what we're doing next week.
Yeah. Well, it was fun while it lasted. I've been your host. Thanks for watching.
Have a good night.